It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you, this is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me, as 92% always, is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
Tomorrow is the Oscars. By the time you hear this, the Oscars will be done. And every year we cover the Oscars. This year we're not covering the Oscars because nobody gives a shit about the Oscars.
My prediction for the Oscar winners is that no black people are going to win.
Yeah, they got a black person hosting, and then they called it quits after that.
Yeah, they were like, hey, we did our part.
Yeah, my prediction for the Oscars is lowest rated Oscars in 10 years.
Do you think Leonardo DiCaprio will win this year for that one where he fights a bear?
People are hoping he doesn't because they say he's not that great in it. He just looked like he lived outside and fought a bear.
Yeah.
And they were like, he's been good in other things. And I was reading an article about how, like, this opens the door way too much of, like, if he wins for this, then, like, actors will be killing themselves on set.
Right.
To try to win their next. It's like James Franco, who, right, like, lived in a crack, like, with his hand crushed by a rock to win an Oscar.
But that's, like, if he doesn't win, like, how crazy do you think he'll get? Because, like, what else can he do to win an Oscar?
Right. I don't actually eat a bear.
Yeah, I kind of want to see what happens. I want to live in a world where he never gets one. They just don't give him one.
Ever? They might just, you know what? It might
he'll get one of those, like, they gave, like, Scorsese one for...
Yeah, they gave him one for The Departed, which is not his best movie at all.
Right.
They just realized, they were like, oh, yeah.
We keep forgetting to give him one.
We screwed this guy over on everything, like Taxi Driver, Goodfellas. Yeah. Like,
he's, like, huge.
We didn't give him any of those. Yeah, they're classics that'll, like, live 50 years from now, and they're like, we didn't give it to him. Let's just give it to him now because he worked with Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
And Leonardo DiCaprio.
And people seem to like that movie.
Yeah. It's a good movie.
Alec Baldwin's in it.
Alec Baldwin's in it. That, I know that puts it three stops ahead on you.
Yep.
What would you do if Alec Baldwin and Jeff Goldblum made a movie?
Oh my God. That sounds like a fantastic movie.
Where they're both fighting over Jenna Louise Coleman.
Oh my God. They could be like creepy old men.
Yeah. That's the name of the movie.
Oh my God.
Creepy old men.
I think this movie pretty much writes itself now.
I think so.
I wonder how else you could.
I'd feel like 2 hours of like, I really think I should go out with her. Yes, 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 but I think I should go out with her,
right,
because I have lots of reasons. You don't have as many reasons as I do. And that's,
it would be magical.
And then, you know, perky British girl in the middle. You know what? It doesn't even have to be Jenna Louise Coleman. Any perky British girl would work.
Yeah, that's true.
This is the age of perky British girls.
The girl from Star Wars is
girl,
like,
from Star Wars. She's ready to take the crown. Hayley Atwell.
Yeah,
she's like the thick, perky British girl.
She was in a World War II show, not Captain America.
Yeah.
She did another one where she plays like the same character as like Peggy Carter. My roommates are watching it. Mm-hmm. It's like people.
Is it like a BBC show?
Yeah, and they like it's like filmed and everyone speaks the language to the country they're from because it's like supposed to be all over Europe.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good. But she plays like the exact same character. She's like an English, like,
maybe they found her in that. Maybe.
MI5 or whatever. MI6.
How old is it?
I think it's before Captain America. She looks younger.
So maybe that's why she got cast. Maybe they were like, hey, that girl from that British show, she could probably do another World War II thing.
Yeah.
And then everybody's like, oh, this girl's amazing.
Right. They put her in everything now.
Yeah. No, they just kept bringing her back. She was in Ant-Man.
I love
she was in
that
Captain
scene
America
in
2.
That was perfect. And they even brought, what's his name back, as Howard Stark. That's a nice touch.
Yeah, Dominic. Oh, no, John Slattery.
Yeah.
There's two Howard Starks because Dominic Cooper
is young Howard
Stark. He's young Howard Stark, and he was in Agent Carter.
Yes.
But then John Slattery was in Iron Man 2, so they brought him back for Ant-Man.
Is Dominic Cooper in the new season of Agent Carter? Or is he busy making the Preacher show?
I think he might be busy making the Preacher show. There's a lot of talk about him, but, you know, Jarvis is in Agent Carter.
Yeah.
So they're living at Howard Stark's house. But I think Dominic Cooper has not been in this season. And this season's been like, it's been okay. It's like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. now. It's like, you know, we were talking about this before. There's so many comic shows that, you know, you can't feel like you're supporting them all. And I'm like, I'm deep into eBay on every episode of Agent Carter.
Yeah.
Like, while Agent Carter's on,
I'm like,
look, they made a Mr. Freeze snow globe.
Right.
I'm like, I think I need that.
I think we used to have that at 10th Planet, like, many, many years ago.
I just bought it.
Is it awesome?
It's shipping.
Yeah.
You know what? And then I think that's what we were going to talk about today, because, as I was saying, the Oscars, there's not much news going on. Comics, there's not a lot of news going on.
Yeah.
some of the big topics we were talking about will be coming soon. Next month's going to be big.
Yeah, we're a couple months away from all the big movies.
Right. I mean, next month we get Batman versus Superman. We get Daredevil season 2 is coming next month. That's going to be big.
Did you see the second trailer for that?
I have not, actually.
I skipped it because I kind of don't want to see another trailer. Yeah. It's like, I know what the first season's like. I don't need... I'm going to watch it.
I saw the stills, you know? And I think it's going to be great. I loved that first season.
Yeah.
That, I think that was the best thing they ever did with Daredevil. When I saw Jessica Jones, I liked Daredevil a little more because Jessica Jones wasn't quite as good.
It wasn't as good. It was still good. I liked it, but Daredevil was just, I watched
almost perfect.
Yeah.
And now it's like, let's switch the Kingpin for Daredevil and let's have Daredevil be Shane from Walking Dead. I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
I'm gonna binge Elektra's that weekend. It? Yeah, Elektra's in it. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll cover that probably the week after it comes out.
So I feel like that's going to be like our whole March. And C2E2 is in the middle of that. Yeah, so it'll be C2E2,
Batman vs. Superman, Daredevil.
That's 3 out of 4 weeks.
Yeah. And I'm sure something else.
Yeah, then maybe somebody else will want to come over and talk to us.
Yeah, there you go.
But like this week, it's a little quiet. So we started talking about things we bought. So I just bought that snow globe. I found it for retail. It's like came out 12 years ago. And I just sold some stuff. I sold a couple of hot toys and I had money, which is dangerous for me.
Yeah.
Because then I immediately go to eBay and I'm like, well, what didn't I buy?
Right.
And I got one of those Batman the Animated Series busts, the diamond busts.
These are new. These are nice.
Yeah. And they don't have a Mr. Freeze.
Not
yet. So I was like, but here's one in a snow globe. And on the bases, like Batman and Robin are frozen in ice.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's from that Sub-Zero movie.
Yeah, but it was a little later. Like it said 2002 on it. So it's
when did
like
Sub-Zero come out?
Sub-Zero is like 97. Sub-Zero is between the first and the second series of Batman.
That's insane.
It's the last thing they did with the first series of Batman.
Yeah.
And then 2002, I mean, Justice League is on.
That's crazy.
So like, I don't know, they just decided to make it. And they could have made a comic book version, but they made it Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah.
And I did not know it was out. Somebody was selling it for retail, free shipping.
Maybe it's a Warner Brothers store thing.
No, it's a DC Direct.
Wow. DC Direct didn't carry stuff at Warner Brothers store? Or Warner Brothers didn't carry DC Direct items?
No, a lot of times they made their own stuff. It would say like Warner Brothers exclusive on it.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't say DC Direct. This says DC Direct because in comic stores. They just made it.
Well, they did make, I did see a Green Lantern snow globe or something or some kind of thing. It's like animated Green Lantern. It's like John Stewart's like the main guy and then it has all like the space ones they use from Justice League.
Oh, that's cool. There was a Justice League snow globe too with like the seven of them and Superman and Martian Manhunter were in the base flying.
Yeah.
And then the other five were standing. So I think DC Direct got into snow globes.
And then we're like,
there was
just
a moment where like snow globes were hot.
It's so weird. That's a weird thing.
I have a good friend. I keep asking him to come on the show. We've never made it work. But I have a good friend that's been working for a toy company since the 90s. And I remember at the time, he was like, snow globes. He's like, we're pitching all these snow globes.
That's wild.
So I think it was just a fad.
That would be an interesting thing as like a creative drawing person to like, all right, design a Avengers snow globe or whatever. Like,
right, what do you put in it? What do you put on the
base? How does it look? How many different turnarounds do you have to do for it? Like,
right, and
some of the drawings for that.
And then the glass
bowl
around it and, you know, what floats in the water. And yeah, it's pretty interesting. The interesting thing was they got so ornate, you were telling me at the time, like the bases got so big you couldn't pick them up and shake them.
Oh.
And I'm like, well, how do you even do this? And they started making electric snow globes that had like a fan.
To blow the
water
around,
like an aquarium.
That's crazy.
Because
they were just like, well, we want it to look cool. It's now it weighs 30 pounds.
Yeah. So I just bought one of those.
Yeah.
So we'll see how it is when it gets here. And you just got the X-Men Omnibus, didn't you?
Yeah, Volume 3. It's Volume 3 of Claremont's run. You said it's the early 80s.
Yeah, it's the stuff right around the time I started collecting. So it's like, it goes up to like 80... late 83, so it's almost Secret Wars.
Yeah.
So this is like 82, 83.
And this is Paul Smith's early
It's Paul
early
Smith's
stuff.
Whole run, because he didn't do that long a run.
Yeah.
But it's got like the Brood Saga, which is like the end of Cockrum, the beginning of Paul Smith. The Japan issues, and they shoved Wolverine in there again.
I saw the Wolverine stuff's in
it's
there.
Kind of annoyed me because it's in the Wolverine Omnibus.
Yeah, but for a guy like me who didn't get that Wolverine Omnibus.
Yeah. See, I got
it. It's in chronologically fits in there.
Yeah, I guess so. And then it also has the Magic limited series in there because it has the Belasco issue.
Yeah, that's weird. Who wrote that?
Claremont.
Oh, yeah.
So it the whole book's Claremont, and then it has the first appearance of the Morlocks. It has the addition of Rogue.
God Loves, Man Kills.
Yeah, God Loves, Man Kills. Professor Xavier is a jerk. isn't there?
Oh, is it? That's where
yeah.
it's in? That's awesome.
It's a pretty good run. The only thing that I find weird about it is that it ends with From the Ashes, and they don't have the epilogue issue, which is like the first full John Romita Jr.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, is there a John Romita Jr.
I was gonna
X-Men
say, is,
omnibus
does
coming?
Does John Romita Jr. start and stay on X-Men for a while after that issue?
Yeah, he's on through 200. And through like 210 or something, up till Mutant Massacre.
Okay.
Like
so
he draws
they,
a lot
they
of
would do
masters.
a fourth volume. Because this
yeah.
is volume 3.
Volume 3. Yeah, there are two volumes of the X-Men, which are the Silver Age X-Men.
I've got those.
And then they rebooted as Uncanny X-Men volume
Yeah, because there's a reprint book for a while.
But that's the one big thing you collect?
It's the... Not the only thing I'm collecting, because I'll get hardcovers of different things here and there, but it's like that's the thing that takes the bulk of like shelf space is these omnibuses. I probably have like 50 of them. It's insane.
Yeah, more than me? He's looking. They're in the room, and Steven has turned away from the microphone.
I might.
Okay.
Because you have more hardcovers than I do, but I think I have more omnibuses.
Do I have a lot of Marvel Masterworks and DC Archives.
Yeah, and I never did those, because those, when...
They only collect 10 issues.
They only collect 10 issues, and they were so expensive when they first came out.
Yeah, they were the only thing in town, so I started collecting
them.
I was collecting them before the omnibuses started. The omnibuses only started like 10 years ago.
Yeah. I want to say it was like Amazing Spider-Man was the first one when the movie came out.
Yeah, I think it was Amazing Spider-Man, and then it was that Uncanny X-Men, because it's been in print a few times.
Yeah, and in fact, they're
reprinting...
And then reprinting
Fantastic Four.
Fantastic Four. They did Iron Man when the movie came out. They did Hulk.
They did it in Iron Man 2 when Iron Man 2 came out. And then when Iron Man 3 came out, they did the Michelinie-Layton, which is the best run of Iron Man.
And now that one, I've got that as well. They could really do a second volume for that.
Well, when they come back, because in between those, there's a Denny O'Neill run, which is good.
And you know what? They are printing that right now in those Epic collections.
Those Epic, yeah.
And it's like his whole run in 12 issues or whatever.
Yeah, because that's the whole run where... Tony becomes a full alcoholic, and Rhodey puts on the armor for the first time, and Rhodey's just Iron Man for like 2 years.
Yeah.
It's like a Dick Grayson kind of thing.
It's awesome.
And then Tony comes back in 200 in the Silver Armor, which is my favorite armor.
That Silver Centurion armor is, yeah.
It's so great. That was only supposed to be for that issue. It was supposed to be, they made him silver because it was his silver anniversary. It was his 25th anniversary.
Yeah.
And it was only supposed to be for like that story. And it was so popular, they kept it around.
That's crazy. Because that was in Armor Wars. It was like, they used that forever.
It was a few years. This is the same thing with the black costume. The black costume was not supposed to come back. And the readers liked it so much that Spider-Man was like, hey, remember that living costume that almost ate me alive? How about I just stitch another one that looks exactly like it out of cloth?
Such a cool design.
Yeah. You know, I'm still at peace with how this thing looks.
Yeah.
Not how it acts.
Right. But the thing tried to eat me. But other than that, it was a pretty slick design.
Yeah. And I'll wear this until a homicidal maniac is running around in the same exact suit.
Yeah.
And then I'll stop wearing
it. It's a nice costume to bring back every once in a while. They did it during that like Back in Black storyline.
Yeah, it's a beautiful design.
Yeah.
Well, and that was around the time that Spider-Man 3 was coming out, which did the black costume, and I was really disappointed. Yeah, all they did was like painted black with the webs.
And it's just like, what?
The whole point of that is the contrast. It's sleek with like bright white.
It's a great look.
But we were also talking about that. We were talking about what we spend our money on. And I think that's a part of it. I know you also are big into the artist edition books.
And that's one of those ones they're like... It's like when they first came out, we didn't really know what those were. They were like $100, and the Walt Simonson was the first one they did. It was like, we skipped it. And then when we found out what it was, we were kicking ourselves because we ended up selling like 5 or 6 of those Walt Simonson's ones. We finally, when they redid the reprint. But it's like, I kind of didn't think they were going to keep making them, so I got almost every one they were doing. And now I've got like a dozen of them, and it's like, I really have to like pick and choose, because it's like, they're huge. Where do you put those things?
I don't have a shelf. At all. They're literally, I have two.
You got the John Byrne Fantastic Four.
I have the John Byrne Fantastic Four, and I have one of the John Romita Spider-Mans. They've done 3 volumes of those. So I got one, and then I was like, I think I'm just going to stop.
Yeah.
It was beautiful, but it's like, isn't that enough?
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like there isn't any other affordable way to get original comic book art other than like digital files. But they're so beautiful, but it's like, you know, they're at least 11 by 17
or bigger.
They're
the size of an actual comic page that you would physically draw on. Yeah.
Right. So they're huge, and it's great to look at them and see that art at the size it was kind of originally drawn at. But it's like, you know, now it's like they do so many of them. Like Dark Horse was doing them. It was DDP. DDP was doing them. And then now, like, DC's doing them. Like, all the other companies are kind of, like, jumping on it and doing it. So
well,
it's, like, every
month.
Well,
first DC was doing those Unwrapped, which were, like, comic size.
Yeah.
And I have a few of the Batmans.
I've got the Hush. And they're cool.
I have Hush. I have Andy Kubert's...
he did the...
Black Glove.
Black Glove, yeah.
And then I have the Capullo Court of Owls.
Yeah.
And that was enough for me. They did, like, a Tony Daniel and a David Finch, but I wasn't big fans of those runs.
Yeah, and that's one of those things where it's just, like, they're very tricky because it's, like, it's one of those things when they weren't doing them, I was like, dying to see original comic art. And they would do, like, one issue of Ultimates 2, number 1. They did, like, it was just a total all-pencils issue. The cover was pencils, the whole interior.
Yeah, they would
pencils.
Have those director's cuts.
And, yeah, and they were really cool. And I'm like, oh, I wish they did stuff like
this
all the
time.
They would
have the script in the back.
Yeah, and now it's like, they're now, art. Then they're like, all right, we're doing it now, but it's like too much. It's like, where can you put all this stuff?
It's like comic book movies.
There's this, like, every month they're doing one. It's,
yeah, we used to have
12 of them a year.
For most of my life, there was just Superman, then there was just Batman.
Yeah.
And then since I've been an adult,
everyone's getting a movie.
Every, you know, Negasonic Teenage Warhead is in a movie.
Yeah. And it's like, what? You know, it's just crazy to see. And it's, you know, like I said, it's and that's becomes the problem where it's like a double-edged sword. It's like, when this stuff's not popular, you want reprints of stuff that isn't in print or isn't available. Then everything becomes popular. Now it's like there's too much stuff. You know, it's like, you know, every month Marvel puts out a different omnibus. So every month it's like, okay, what are they doing? Oh, Shang-Chi. Okay, cool. I don't have to worry about Shang-Chi. I don't care about Shang-Chi. I don't have to get the Shang-Chi omnibus. Then they're going to do Steve Ditko's entire run on Doctor Strange because the movie's coming out. It's like,
yeah,
fuck.
I'll have to get that.
It's like, I've never read those. It's Steve Ditko, so it's going to be awesome, crazy, trippy stuff. And it's like,
and it's complete.
It's the whole run. How do you say no to that? You know? And it's like, you can't really get a better.
It was like the Nick Fury Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. omnibus. I was like, yeah, of course. I think it was my greatest thing in the world that week. I was like, it's the whole Starenko.
Yeah.
And when it's not Starenko, it's Kirby.
Right. So there's like, maybe like three issues that aren't either of them. And it's like,
right.
Just to complete the run. And it's like, I think that's the thing I have the really hard time with is, you know, if what omnibus is to get and one to like skip. Like I skip the Hulk and I skip the original Iron Man.
I have those
from the '60s because they weren't super great creative teams.
Yeah.
You know, but then the Captain America is half Kirby. So
yeah,
it's
mostly
like
Kirby, yeah.
It's mostly
and
Kirby
those are
to
great
get that.
Kirby.
And they're great. So it's like I'm reading that now. It's like, you know, the first two runs of, or the first two omnibuses for Amazing Spider-Man in the 60s is Ditko for the first one and then Romita for the second one. It's like, so I've got those. It's like, there's three volumes of Fantastic Four for Kirby and Lee. There's three volumes of
and
Thor
it's not
for
finished.
Kirby
they
and
could
Lee.
Do a fourth.
Yeah.
I mean,
like,
it would be short on Kirby and Lee, but then it's like,
but then doesn't Buscema do it
yeah,
after?
Yeah, John Romita does a couple of issues. It's all great stuff.
Yeah, so it's like it's not as great as Kirby and Lee, but it's still worth reading.
Right, and those, I never stopped with the Masterworks because they, because as I said, they were coming out before the omnibuses, so I already had them.
Yeah.
And I'm OCD enough to want to have a complete
run.
To
keep going, yeah.
So I have the Spider-Man omnibuses and the Spider-Man Masterworks, and both Fantastic Four and Spider-Man are up to issue 200.
Yeah.
So they just keep going. And they're both at a point where I'm like, I'm done. Because the last Fantastic Four, it was volume 17, it led right up to a premiere hardcover. So there's no gap, which went to 200. And there was nothing between 200 and 230 when John Byrne takes over. That's an anonymous.
Yeah.
Nothing of that I wanted to get. So I finally, it took me about 10 years to collect.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm out. Because they do one a year. Spider-Man... Then they announce the next volume, and most of it is in a premiere hardcover, which is like the first appearance of Black Cat.
Yeah.
So I think I'm out of Masterworks, but they will just keep going, even if it's not the greatest run in the world.
And that's what I guess it's one of the things I think about is when they're doing the omnibuses, like when is enough for them? Where it's like, all right, well they've got two volumes for Avengers. From the original run, are they going to do a third volume? Do they do a fourth volume? Do they do a fifth volume? Are they going to just do George Perez's 70s run? Like how do they divide it up for the person that maybe wants to get the entire run versus, you know, something like Iron Man, where it's like, there's a lot of not so great runs on Iron Man.
Right. It was a B title for a long time.
Yeah. And it's like, I guess that's like, you know, they do the Ditko run of Doctor Strange, but then do they try to do a second volume that has whoever followed Ditko?
Well, that was a really good run with Marshall Rogers in the late 70s.
Yeah.
I think Steve Englehart wrote. Well, the thing with Marvel Omnibuses is that you can always count on them coming in with a movie.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the movies that Marvel Studios doesn't do, like X-Men, Fantastic Four, Deadpool, you won't see figures. You won't see new titles being launched, but you always see an omnibus.
Yeah.
Like, we just had the Cable Deadpool omnibus. We just had a Deadpool Volume 2 omnibus for that movie. We got that third volume of Fantastic Four because of the movie that bombed.
Yeah, and the Wolverine omnibus came out when the Wolverine Origins
came out. Wolverine Origins came out, right. Yeah. So when Old Man Logan comes out,
yeah.
Well, we've already had a complete Millar Wolverine omnibus, but we'll probably get another one. Maybe there'll be a Wolverine Volume 2 that goes up to, like, issue 50.
They might even reprint the stuff, because that's what I'm seeing more often than not, is originally they weren't reprinting the omnibus, so it's really hard to get them.
Yeah, I remember that first Uncanny X-Men going for like $400 on eBay.
Yeah, and then they finally reprinted it, so now the price on that dropped, but it was like Daredevil by Bendis is worth $400.
Yeah, Daredevil by Miller is worth a ton too.
Yeah, and they finally reprinted Miller's run in Daredevil, but they haven't done Bendis's. You know, it's like they've got an Iron Fist show coming out, so they might reprint Brew Baker and Fraction's Iron Fist run, or print the classic Iron Fist stuff,
right,
with, like,
or Alias with Jessica Jones out.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like you said, they always try to line it up with whatever is coming out, and then other times they're just like, well, there's no X-Men movie out right now, but here's Volume 3 of, you know, Claremont's run.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, although I think this one that came out this week is tied into Apocalypse.
Oh, that's right.
So, because
it's weird that they didn't do, like, an X-Factor omnibus that would do, like, Archangel and Apocalypse and all that stuff.
Although they are reprinting Age of Apocalypse.
Yes.
Which I got a couple of years ago.
The omnibus?
Yeah.
Yeah, see? There you go.
So there's that.
And it's like they did...
Well, and that's the clever thing about X-Men, is if they did one more really fat Volume 4...
That's everything.
That would be everything, because that leads right into Mutant Massacre, which then... After that, the 90s, they're all the omnibuses are based around the events, but then they include all the Uncanny X-Men issues around that.
Yeah.
So you have a straight run. I believe pretty much I have a straight run from Mutant Massacre to Onslaught.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a couple of breaks in there. I know in X-Men there's a bunch of breaks, but Uncanny?
It's a straight run almost.
I think some things might be missing.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons I don't have X-Men back issues.
Yeah, it's...
I do have a full run of Cable.
Just because you need it.
He's going to be in Deadpool 2. Those books are going to go up.
And does he have... They did a Cable omnibus, didn't they? Oh, no, the Deadpool.
No, they did an X-Force omnibus, and they did a Cable Deadpool omnibus.
And I think that's, like, is the goal then to do everything? Because originally they were supposed to be, like, Marvel's best runs.
Right, and that's the thing with Omnibus, is like, is this really one of the best runs?
Right.
And I'm at the point now where, other than doing more X-Men, I'm looking at my shelf right now, it's like, there's nothing I really need. I'll get that second Cap one, but there's nothing, like, the ones I really wanted was the Leighton Iron Man and the Roger Stern Spider-Man, which is my favorite run of Spider-Man ever.
Yeah.
And they did those.
I got those.
Those are beautiful. And those issues hold up really well. But even weird books I have, like Untold Tales of Spider-Man, which nobody really knows about, is a great omnibus.
Yeah.
There's a McFarlane Amazing Spider-Man omnibus. They're coming out with a McFarlane Spider-Man omnibus.
Yeah, that's supposed to be out in a couple months.
Yeah. Thor, there's a Simonson. I would like to see a third Kirby Thor.
I think they did do a third Kirby, didn't they?
They did it in Masterworks. No, I'm looking at two of them. Maybe when Ragnarok comes out.
Yeah.
You know what?
Yeah,
I bet when Ragnarok comes out,
they'll do the rest of the run.
Yeah, because Simonson, I think, came out for the first Thor movie. I think they did both.
I think so.
Yeah. There's not a lot that's not out. And you get to that point in these collections. It's like Hot Toys, which is another really expensive thing. We've talked about Hot Toys before, but if you don't know, they're 12-inch figures, like Barbie size, but they're like $200 because they're so lifelike.
Yeah, it's if you haven't seen one in person, it's kind of hard to describe, because I didn't really see them until we got one at 10th Planet years ago, and that was like kind of early on, so they didn't look as good. But now you see them, and it's like they look like somebody shrank down Jack Nicholson as the Joker and put him on your shelf, because it looks perfect. The clothes are exactly how they look in the movie. They come with movie accurate accessories. Like, he's got the long gun. It's like, they're awesome. Like, there's no question. The likenesses are unbelievable. Like, the amount of detail in these suits is like, it's crazy.
But just like those artist editions, those IDW right. artist editions.
Where do you put them?
It's too much of a good thing, because the first time I ever saw them was the year I went to San Diego. It was 2008. So they had Iron Man and Christian Bale Batman.
Yeah.
And Heath Ledger Joker. And I remember seeing them on display and going, I don't care what these costs, I'm going to get. And back then they were $150.
Yeah.
Which seemed outrageous. And I was like, I don't care.
Yeah.
That was also the same year that they showed that giant Millennium Falcon for $150.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't care. And by the way, I'm so glad I bought that, because
oh, yeah. What's it worth now?
They re-released it a few years ago at $250 because the price of oil had gone up. And now with Force Awakens, they didn't even bother to re-release it. They put out a smaller, crappier version for like $150.
Wow.
So,
glad you got it when you
yeah,
did.
Yeah, Ben and I saw the new version in Toys R Us, and he's like, well, that's kind of, I was like, what you have is better.
Yeah.
And in Force Awakens, the inside of that ship is exactly the
right.
same.
The only thing that's different is that like radar dish.
Yeah, fine. You know what? And I'm sure somebody right now is sculpting that radar dish.
You could buy it.
And it's
going to
sell just those radar dishes to pop it in. But there are certain things as a collector and as a comics fan where there are certain moments where you just go, I don't care what that costs.
Yeah.
I don't care where I'm going to put it. I'm going to get it. And that's with Hot Toys, I had to draw the line at some point. And I finally drew the line of like, no more Marvel. Because
right.
Marvels are beautiful. They've done, you know, God, they must have done 20 Iron Man armors and 5 Robert Downey Jr.'s and everyone in the Avengers. But it gets to a point, Marvel Studios very deliberately tweaks the costume for every single movie.
Yeah.
So unless there's one movie that's your favorite movie ever, and the way Marvel Studios is running, that doesn't really happen. You're just into Marvel Studios. It's like, I can't spend thousands of dollars to have
9 Avengers.
Yeah, well, they have 7 Thors.
Right. And I think it's something...
And nowhere to put them.
It's, you know, and it's one of those things where the thing about Hot Toys is they go up in value. So it's like, unless... That would be like, if I had the money to do it, it'd be like, all right, you buy the first Thor they do. Then Thor Ragnarok comes out. Then you sell your old Thor, get your new Thor, and you just upgrade every movie.
Yeah, I was doing that for a while.
To the newest thing.
And a lot of times you'd make double your money back.
Right.
So you could buy 2 more Hot Toys with the money.
Yeah.
And then it just... But it just got to a point where I was just tired. And
but
now...
Where do you put them, though? It's like, you have these huge bookcases in the studio, and it's like... They can't all fit. You couldn't have fit the Hulk. You know, it's like,
well, that's why I stopped with Marvel, because I realized the Hulk was $400.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't know if he's going to fit on my shelf. And I know he's not going to fit on my shelf with the other Avengers.
Yeah.
And it's like, my whole display is going to be Avengers. And now my whole display is Batman, because that's who I am. And if you look at my shelf, those are really the only Hot Toys I have is I have... and they stick to the live action versions. They don't do comic versions. They don't do animated versions.
Yeah.
But on my shelf, they've done Adam West and Michael Keaton and Christian Bale. They're doing Ben Affleck.
Yeah. And so, like I said, it's so awesome to see kind of them all on the same display almost, because it's like...
It's like a history.
It is. And you get to see, Batman, you know, 3 or 4 different versions of Batman. You get 2 to 3 different versions of the Joker, because it's, well... I guess they haven't done Cesar Romero.
No, if they do, I would buy him.
But that's what I'm saying. Like,
but I have a Heath Ledger and a Jack Nicholson.
And
Sideshow's done their own comic versions.
Right.
So I have
a Brian Bolland, like, Joker.
Yeah, I have a Brian Bolland Joker and a Jim Lee Batman.
Have they announced doing Batman 66 villains in Hot Toys?
No, they announced a Batmobile.
Good God.
They released Batmobiles for the Tim Burton and the Nolan.
What do they retail for?
For like $500.
And do the figures fit in them?
Yes.
Oh my
God. A 12-inch figure
God.
Sits in the driver's seat and has a passenger seat next to it, because that's how they look, like coffee tables.
Yeah.
I was in a Mock Time, which is a great store in New York that I've been going to for years, and they had the box of a Tim Burton Batmobile, and it was 5 feet tall.
Oh my God.
And there's just no way. Like, I'm an enormous Batman fan. I don't know many people who are as big a Batman fan as I am.
Yeah.
And even I'm like, I can't. If I could afford it, I wouldn't have anywhere to put it.
That's my issue. It's like, where would it go?
Well, remember years ago, I bought the Sideshow Map Room from Raiders of the Lost Ark. Raiders of the Lost Ark is my favorite movie. The only things I have on my shelves, other than Batman, I have a couple of Doctor Who, which, you know, someday I might sell.
Yeah.
But I have the Indiana Jones. I have them from all four movies. And right now I have X-Files because I was super into that series, but they'll go back into storage at some point. But they made a map room, and it had the whole city of Tanis, and it had a place to put the Staff of Ra.
Yeah. And wasn't he in the getup, too?
The Hot Toys came with a change of clothes, and I have the Hot Toys Indiana Jones came with the pedestal from the idol in the beginning.
Yeah.
But it also came with the robes, and you could put the Arab disguise on him.
Yeah, he looked awesome.
So you could display that with him. So it was like $200, and I'm like, well, you know what? Indiana Jones is my favorite. They don't do much with him. Like, you're lucky to get anything a couple of years. There was a bunch of stuff when Crystal Skull came out, and that was it.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm buying it. And I remember you were with me because it showed up the day at C2E2. And I remember I looked at this box, and I got so disappointed because I immediately realized I couldn't put it anywhere.
Yeah.
I had nowhere in my house where I could display this thing, and it sat in my basement for 2 years, and I sold it on eBay.
Yeah. And it's the thing, it's like these things are so incredibly detailed and well made, and it's just like, you just kind of got to wonder, like, how many people bought the fucking Hot Toys Batmobile? Where do they put it?
Well, they only made a couple of thousand, which is a lot. And they realized if they sold it for $500, they'd make a profit, and they'd sell to hardcore fans.
Just, it's like blows and my mind.
Again, a friend of mine that works at a toy company said that one of the reasons this is a golden age of collectibles is because all the guys who are in charge are my age.
Yeah.
So they're all...
They want the same things you want.
Yeah, and we are... Generation X is the action figure generation more than anyone else. Because before us, there were Amigos and there were G.I. Joes, which were basically dolls.
Yeah.
But we got the first Star Wars toys. And that was the center of our universe. And then once toy companies figured out why Star Wars worked as a toy outside of the movie's popularity...
Yeah.
We got G.I. Joe, we got He-Man, we got Superpowers, we got Secret Wars. We got every license as an action figure. Video games weren't that great yet, so they weren't much of a threat. Video was in its infancy. You mostly had a VCR where you taped your own shows. You know, and then just the properties that were coming out came pre-sold as franchises. It was like, oh, we love Star Wars because we love the Star Wars movie. Now here are dolls.
Yeah.
Now here comes G.I. Joe again, which was a reboot.
Right.
But, hey, it's got its own cartoon and its own comic book right away.
It's crazy.
So they started doing that in the 80s. So that was stamped into our brains of, like, action figures are the center of your universe. And now those guys are running toy companies.
Right.
You know, guys like Jesse Falcon, who we've talked about coming on the show, and we're trying to make that work, who's running Toy Biz for a while. It's around my age.
Yeah.
So, like, he's the guy that comes in and comes up with Marvel Legends. And it's like, hey, Marvel toys aren't selling, but what if we did Spider-Man that had 30 different joints and you could pose them exactly like the comic? And then people go crazy for that.
Yeah.
So there's an attention to detail in toys these days that no one else is doing. Hot Toys, the guy that runs Hot Toys is around my age. And he was a guy that was like, what if we took these dolls and made them museum quality, like Madame Tussauds wax figures?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like you said, the likenesses are they're beyond belief. It's how much they look like the actors that are playing them in the movies. And it's like you said, it's like they can even do, you know, they don't have to go off the properties. They'll just use whatever movie's out now. So
right. And yeah, they don't have to go in the past anymore. I mean, they don't have to find... They do. I mean, there's a Marty...
They did Christopher Reeve's Superman.
Right. They did Michael J. Fox, Marty McFly.
Yeah.
They all, like, they will go back, but now there's so much out there. And we keep talking about this on the show, just how many movies there are. They're doing Ben Affleck.
There's two Ben Afflecks, right? Because there's him as Batman and then him in the armor.
Yep.
And Superman.
There's a bunch of Civil War figures coming.
Yeah.
You know, they did Falcon from Winter Soldier. There's an Ant-Man out now. I mean,
they did all the Guardians. They did Groot.
They
and
did
Rocket.
All the Guardians. Yeah. I think Drax is not out, but all the rest came out. Groot and Rocket came as one.
Yeah.
They can just keep going with this stuff. And it's at a level that we always wished for when we were kids. The same way when you were a kid reading comics, you wished you could see that art.
Yeah.
Because you're an artist now. Okay, we'll give you that art. You're going to have to pay for it.
Yeah. Yeah, and the same thing. It's like they're expensive, but it's like the guys who are buying it, it's people struggling in their 20s aren't buying it. It's guys who have houses and have a place to put them. It's like guys that can afford it. You know, they're marketing to an older generation where It's the generation that has a little extra cash. You know, they're not, these aren't four teenagers. No teenagers buying hot toys.
Right. And, you know, and our generation, our mine and to some extent yours.
Yeah.
Our generation is the generation that said it's okay to keep all your childhood things.
Yeah.
Whereas like our parents' generation, even my uncles, like kids who grew up in the 70s, they kind of got stuck in their 20s. You know, they just wanted to listen to rock and roll and drink, and they wanted to keep wearing jeans, and they wanted all that stuff in their 20s. We kind of all want that stuff when we're 12 forever.
Yeah.
And the entertainment properties have marketed up to us where for a while, you know, when you get to like 18, 19, you feel a little childish still reading comics and buying action figures. So then all of a sudden they caught up. As we've said many times on the show, in the 80s, like older people were feeling awkward buying Spider-Man. But yeah. Hey, here comes Watchmen. Here comes Dark Knight Returns. Here comes Mouse.
Yeah.
Here comes these adult comics.
And it's like finally something you can kind of show like, you know, doubting parents or something where it's like it's kind of moved beyond what it was originally. And that happens when that first generation of fans grows up and starts working in the industry, right? When they were making comics, Jack Kirby didn't give a fuck about comic books.
Right.
He was just doing it because he couldn't be an architect or whatever he really wanted to do. You know, it's then all these guys grew up on that stuff, and that first generation, guys like Marv Wolfman and Len Wein come in, it's like kind of revolutionized the business, yep. You know, and then you get, you know, it's the same thing with the toys. It's like you said, why do we have 22 Batman the Animated Series action figures right now? Oh, because somebody grew up as a kid, loved that show, got into toys, got into making it, and said, hey, we can make a line of these figures. It's the best-selling line DC Direct's ever done.
I have every single one of them. And that's a perfect example of, like, you know, when I was in high school, I would still kind of watch Super Friends because, hey, there was Batman.
It was the only thing they had, yeah.
It was the only thing they had. And Bruce Timm was like, no, what if we really made it like the comics? And then Batman the Animated Series comes out. And now it's a touch point for your generation who grew up on that.
Yeah.
So then the nostalgia factor kicks in. And it's something that never really went away. It's not like we all forgot about Batman the Animated Series in a way that, say, we all forgot about the Adam West Batman for a while.
Or the 90s Spider-Man cartoon.
Any of the 90s cartoons, X-Men, any of the 90s Marvel.
Yeah.
Batman was always kind of there. Like, I remember first of all, it stayed on until Justice League Unlimited.
Yeah.
Which was like 2006, I think it finally ended. And then turned into the movies.
Right.
Which some of them kind of connect, some of them don't. And then it was rerunning for a long time. Cartoon Network had it for a while, and it's on Amazon Prime now.
It seems like it's always streaming.
It's
always
around. Yeah, but again, that Batman the Animated Series line, it's the best line I collect. They showed 23 figures at Toy Fair, and there was not a single one I said I wasn't going to get.
Yeah.
Like we were saying about Hot Toys Batmobiles, like, oh, it's too expensive. There's nowhere I can fit it. They showed a $150 Batwing that I can't put anywhere.
Right.
I'm going to buy it.
Yeah.
Even if it stays in the box in the basement and every now and then I bring it up.
From the ceiling, I was talking to Karma about it because the Batmobile was kind of like $100. I think we've talked about this on the show before. It was like our hottest selling at Christmas item. We probably sold like 14 or 15 of them.
That's like thousands of dollars for the shop.
Yeah, because it's the thing retails at like $100. So it's like, you know, cost or whatever. But the Batwing will probably sell maybe half that. We'll maybe sell 7 or 8 of them. But we're going to get one. Karm's going to buy one. And because he, same thing, has nowhere to put the damn thing, we're going to hang it from the roof, like the ceiling in the shop,
on
like
a tall roof.
Fishing wire, and have the thing like flying through the store. Because it's like, how awesome is that? And it's just like, it's so cool.
When you do that, you show me how to do it without it falling down.
Yeah, there you go.
And I'll do
and
it
And you'll
here.
Do the same thing in the office here. And it's like, it's just, it's like the generation that really wanted this stuff finally has the money to be able to buy it.
Or the power to create it that way.
Yeah.
That was one of the things that Millennium Falcon I mentioned. When I was at San Diego, I was a reporter for Figures.com. So I interviewed the guy that designed it. And it turned out he was the same guy that designed the original Millennium Falcon toy in the 70s.
Well, that's crazy.
So that, you know, that...
And you were saying, and I think I maybe heard this before, that he pretty much did with the new one what he wanted to do with the original but couldn't afford to.
Yeah. So, and not only that, but then he had the hindsight of two other movies. Because that first toy came out between Star Wars and Empire.
Yeah.
Then Empire Strikes Back comes out, and there's all these new parts of the Millennium Falcon they didn't show before. It's like a hospital bed where they put Luke. And then there's like a hallway where like Han Solo and Chewbacca can fix the Millennium Falcon. And he's like, I could put that all in there too.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get these ultimate toys. And that's kind of the thing now of like, we have anything we want.
Yeah.
You know, and there's times I think about like my career track or my salary of like, well, what do I want to be? Like, do I want to become a manager? Do I want to make this amount of money? And then I think about it, I'm like, I can kind of get anything I want now.
Yeah.
Because all I really want is more toys.
Right. And I think that's like the interesting thing is like making that call at some point of like, you know, all right, the omnibuses are kind of taking over. It's like you really start after making like judgment calls about like what not to get. Do you know?
Right.
And I think that that's like you said, it's like, you know, Batman the Animated Series is something you're gonna keep getting. So it's like, all right, well, what's gotta go? Oh, probably these Iron Man busts, because it's, you need, if there's no point in buying them and not displaying them.
Right. So you could sell them and get some of your money back and put it towards more stuff.
Right. And it's like you said, it kind of like, especially if it's something where you're flipping stuff, it kind of funds the next group of stuff. You know, it's like you sell a hot toy that gives you funds to buy the new one and then a little extra cash. You know, right. It's like, because they kind of just keep going up in price, you know, and especially with these Batmans, I remember we were talking about that the market responded to the quality that they were having with the figures, because originally the quality was not so great.
No, DC Direct, now they're DC Collectibles, but going back to DC Direct, they've always kind of had a reputation for being fragile and being brittle. And again, I was talking to my friend who works for a toy company about DC Direct, and he's like, yeah, they know they're going to break, but you know, they can buy the plastic that's in the joints is cheaper if it's more brittle, and then you don't see it in the box. The figure looks great, but then you move it and it cracks. But you're right. The Batman Animated Series figures were so popular. You had all of these people that didn't know DC Direct had these issues. And the Batman and the Catwoman from the first series had so many problems. Mine are fine.
Yeah.
But they had so many problems that DC Direct had to fire, DC Collectibles had to fire the factory.
Right.
They're remaking them. I don't know if they've been offered to you again, but there's all supposed to be a new print run.
Yeah.
And they'll even look different. They're not going to have the pins in the hips.
The joints are different.
Yep. So, and they'll come out all over again. So they were so popular and they were selling in such numbers that DC had to address it. And DC was like, we've never heard about this before. And it's like, man, your toys have been breaking for 10 years.
Oh, shit. Yeah, you know
it's
exactly.
Just that 3,000 people were buying them. Now maybe 10,000 people are buying these.
Yeah.
And this is a real issue. How well, as you said, the Batmobile sold really, really well. How well are the figures doing?
I mean, it's our best-selling line of figures right now. We've had like single one-off figures that do really well. Like the Deadpool movie just came out, so we've sold, you know, two cases of the, you know, Marvel's, I think it's a Marvel Legends Deadpool.
No, it's Marvel Select, actually.
Marvel Select. Yeah.
Marvel Legends has been out of print for a while, and they announced a new one at Toy Fair in the next X-Men set.
Oh, there you go. And these are the ones, because it's an individual. You can order them individually,
right.
Which is, you can't really do that with the Legends.
They come in those really big
boxes. They're huge,
yeah.
But that's, you know, we'll have a one-off figure that'll do really well, but no single series of figures. Even like the Star Wars Black series, which is like the first time Star Wars did 6-inch figures, those did really, really well, and we sold out of all of them, and we're kind of just waiting for the next line to come in. But we have...
And you get Marvel Legends all the time.
All the time. And, you know, they sell, but we don't order either of those series with nearly the quantity we're ordering these Batman figures, because it's like... It's just like... It's kind of like they're miniature hot toys almost. They all come with different accessories that are episode specific. They come with different hands, depending on what they're supposed to hold. They come with stands. It's like... They're just doing a phenomenal job with these figures. And it's like I said, there isn't really any other toy line... Since we've been open, we're coming up on our 5th year anniversary. That even compares to this series.
Yeah, and you know what? I have to say, I'm as big a Batman fan as I am, and that's one of the reasons I have all these hot toys of Batman, which are right over hardcovers of like the best of Batman in history. So it's, my wall is kind of like a history of Batman in a way, where I have. You know, I have Michael Keaton and Adam West and Christian Bale as hot toys on top. And then I have right below it, hardcovers of Bob Kane Batman. And below that, hardcovers of Neil Adams and Marshall Rogers and
Hush.
Jim Aparo and Hush and Greg Capullo and Alan Davis, Norm Breyfogle. And you get this Kelly Jones, who was on the show. I actually bought the Kelly Jones hardcover because he was so great on our show.
Yeah.
If you go back and listen to that episode, he was so touched that they made a hardcover book of his issues.
That's awesome.
And then I was like, in the middle of the interview, I was like, I have all his issues. I'm going to buy that book. And I'm reading it right now. So I have this wonderful history, but I look at the animated figures and I realize, it's really the animated series is my favorite thing.
It is.
And I like them more than any movie they've ever made.
Yeah.
Even the Nolan stuff. People go crazy for the Nolan stuff, and I appreciate them more than I love those movies.
Yeah.
But, man, that animated series is, it was pitch perfect.
Yeah.
To the point where I'm, like, buying all the trade paperbacks from the comic, because the comic book was as good as the animated series at the time.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's just like, you know, there's a lot of stuff I'd like to see them do with the Marvel characters. Like, oh, wouldn't it be great if they wrote a story like this for the X-Men or this for the Avengers or this for Spider-Man? I don't really do that as much with DC because they did it in those shows between Batman, Superman, and the Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. It's like...
And even Batman Beyond, which I hated as an idea.
Yeah, and it's same thing. I couldn't get behind that as a kid, and then I went back to it when it was on Netflix finally, and it was like... Say what you will about it, they pulled off what I think is like an impossible concept, is basically make Batman Spider-Man, and they did a phenomenal
job. In the future.
Yeah, and it's like, it's on
make
paper, it doesn't
make
it
a
work.
Sci-fi show.
Yeah, and it worked great.
Yeah,
and
I think like in hindsight also helps that show is knowing Justice League is coming.
Yeah.
Because I think
that it's going to tie into it.
Well, yeah, and when it was on... I remember just being so disappointed that they weren't making more Batman because they had just brought it back and they changed all the designs and they did the second series and they did like 100 episodes of the first series. They only did like 25.
There weren't a lot of the new designs.
No,
yeah.
Because they had already done Superman and they only did like 2 13 episode seasons, and then all of a sudden it was Batman Beyond, and I was like, no, I just want more Batman. I was like, why are you throwing the baby out with the bathwater? But kind of knowing that we're taking this side trip.
Yeah.
And then we're going to come back to Justice League and tie it all together. There's it reminded me of Preacher, which is going to come out as a show on AMC.
Yeah.
I have very mixed feelings about it because I adore that series, and I don't know that they're going to nail it right.
I've never read Preacher, but I think it's one of those things where I know enough about it to where it's like, they announced it, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not surprised they're making it. I don't see it. I just don't,
I don't know.
See it.
But there was a year in Preacher where they basically... ditch the whole concept, and I'll try to stay spoiler free, but it's like, you know, something happens and it splits up the main characters.
Yeah.
And then there's like a year where Jesse, who's main character in Preacher, he loses all his main friends, and and the main villains are gone, and kind of the plot has stopped, and he's just like in this new scenario.
Yeah.
And it's this whole different story for like a year. And at the time I was like, wait, what happened to Cassidy? What happened to Tulip?
Where are we going with this?
Where are we going to it? But then when you read the whole thing together, you go, and you know he comes back later.
Yeah.
Like, it's like those 12 issues, then he comes back. But when he comes back, he's taken what he's learned from that story adds to the whole. Then you're like, oh, this is perfect. And Batman Beyond is like that.
Yeah.
Where, like, why are we in the future and Bruce Wayne's old and like, but then you come back to Justice League and Dwayne McDuffie wrote that beautiful episode that tied the two together. You go, all right, it's all part of this universe.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can even include some of the direct-to-DVD movies.
Yeah, they do fit. You know, it's a
this
little
last
tricky.
One, well, this last one, Gods and Monsters, feels like an Elseworlds in that world.
Yeah.
Justice League Crisis on Two Earths, the Crime Syndicate one,
yeah,
was written as a script to bridge Justice League and Justice League Unlimited.
And if you watch it, that's one of the ones I didn't know that originally, but if you watch it again with that in mind... and pretend Hal Jordan is John Stewart.
Which is the only change they make, other than the character designs don't look like Bruce Timm.
Yeah, they're not
spot
on, but it's like, it explains where Wonder Woman gets the invisible jet from, it explains why they rebuild the Watchtower.
And why they add all these new members.
Right, yep. why they grow the Justice League. You know, it was pretty perfect, and it's, you know, like you said, it's one of those things where it's like, it's from start to finish, you know, I watched every episode of that, all those series growing up. Start to finish, it's the most cohesive DC universe story they've ever done. The comics can't touch it, you know, at all. And it's, you know, part of that just because this is the vision of, you know, a group of writers instead of dozens and dozens of writers over, you know, 75 years. But it's like...
And they're also distilling the best of the best of the best.
Totally. They have the advantage of that. But.
Right. In the comics, you can't do a Denny O'Neill story over again because people have read it and people will accuse you of repeating yourself. But if you're doing the animated series and you take that Danny O'Neill story, and well, now it's something new.
Yeah.
You know, like that that episode Sideshow where Killer Croc finds the circus freaks.
Yeah.
That's a Neil Adams story.
Oh, yeah?
It's before the creation of Killer Croc, so he's just a robber. He's like a normal robber. He's not one of the main supervillains.
Yeah.
That whole story is from that Danny O'Neill Neil Adams run, but it's a beautiful episode.
Yeah.
You know, and if you hadn't read that story, and if you're not a long-time comic fan, you haven't.
Right.
I mean, you didn't.
Never knew it. Yeah.
Then it seems like something that fits in that universe. So they could cherry-pick the best of, you know, 75 years of the DC Universe. They did For the Man Who Has Everything. They did Alan Moore in Justice League Unlimited.
Yeah. It was a Black Mercy.
I was always waiting for them to do Nightfall.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised they haven't done it as a movie.
Yeah, it's one of those things, you know, they're doing those animated movies like 3 or 4 a year, 2 a year, whatever it is. And it's like at some point they'll get to do the bigger one-off stories that we haven't seen, like Nightfall or
right.
No Man's Land.
Well, they
Land.
Have done, and Bruce Timm was very involved, so I kind of counted in there. They did the Dark Knight Returns and Year One, and now they're doing the Killing Joke. Those are the pedestals
probably
of 80s Batmans, yeah.
They're probably the three biggest Batman stories they've ever done.
Right, and they're doing them all, but they're not doing them Bruce Timm style because they're trying to look like the artists of those books.
Yeah.
You know, they try to look like Frank Miller and David Mazzucchelli, and from what I've seen of this Killing Joke, they're going to do Brian Bolland.
Yeah, and it's really interesting to see. It's one of those things where you're just like, oh, I wonder how they're going to pull that off. And it's like when they do it, it's like, it's like genius. It's unbelievable how close they can get animation to look like those comic books. It's so crazy.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a longtime fan, this is a golden age because everything you want has been perfectly distilled for you.
Yeah.
You know, if you love Batman the Animated Series, here's all the figures. You can get the entire series on DVD.
Yeah.
They're streaming on Amazon Prime. Every story you want is being made into a movie, whether it's live action or animated.
Right.
If you want the original art's there. One of the things I meant to start the podcast with, and we never got to it, was back issues. I have more back issues now than I've ever had.
Yeah.
And sometimes I wonder, I spent the most money I've ever spent on a comic book in my life. A couple weeks ago, I bought the first appearance of Ra's al Ghul, or Ra's al Ghul. We've had that argument.
Yeah.
But it's a Neil Adams book. It's the first appearance of a major character who is played by Liam fucking Neeson.
Yeah.
So that book is never going down in value. And I have it like twice.
Yeah.
Because I have it. I have the complete Neil Adams hardcovers, one of which he signed for me because I met him at a New York Comic Con with it.
Yeah.
And I have a Ra's al Ghul trade paperback. But there was something about that book, the fact that that book is from that time.
It's like a holy grail of comic books. You know, go find a top 10 list of Batman comic books. That's in every top 10 list. And if it isn't, the guy who wrote the list is an idiot.
There's something totemistic about holding the actual comic in your hand. And also the completism, which is why I have two hardcover versions of the Steve Ditko Spider-Mans,
right,
is also like I can go through a long box and not miss a number.
Yeah.
Like I know everything that they made with Batman in the year 1971. I own it.
Yeah.
There's something about that. Do you have a lot of back issues?
No, I used to have a lot of back issues. Working at a comic store and getting paid half in credit will do that to you. But it's to the point now where I'd rather have them in the hardcovers because I can't afford and I don't have the room for back issues. So I'm completely getting rid of them. I mean, all my back issues right now are at the Woodridge store. Right. You know,
and to be fair, the omnibuses are better print jobs, nicer paper.
And I don't ever worry about, you know, I have like a lot of nice old back issues. I've got a lot of Danny O'Neill, Neil Adams, Green Lantern, Green Arrow stuff.
Oh, that's good.
I've got the first
hardcover that.
Yeah.
Didn't they just come out with an Absolute?
They did. I've got that. So it's like I'm kind of going to start selling all these back issues. You know, I've got the first appearance of Bullseye because I thought he was a cool villain and I bought it on eBay. I got two copies of The Death of Elektra because I was super into like Frank Miller stuff. But it's like all that stuff's being collected in, you know, nice hardcovers. And I'd rather just, if the hardcovers is like, you're going to reread it, you know? So it's something where it's just like, I don't want to have to flip through and unbag and board 30 issues to read something. I'd rather sit down, spend half an hour, read 20 issues and, you know.
Yeah, I just did that. The last couple of months, I bought the new trade paperbacks of the Batman Adventures, with the comic of the animated series.
Yeah.
I lucked out so hard. About 3 or 4 years ago, I was working near a little comic store where they had these back issues that were all comics for a dime. And at the same time, I went to a little mini convention where somebody had like loose comics that were three for a dollar. And they had all of the Batman adventures.
Yeah.
So I got them all. And then I realized that the only two I don't have are appearances of Harley Quinn. And they're like $50 now.
Yeah. Because it's her first comic appearance,
which is kind of ridiculous to me. Because I can understand Mad Love, which was the first time they showed the origin. It was drawn by Bruce Timm. It was written by Paul Dini. It wasn't a big book. I have an original of that because I bought it from Bulletproof Comics when it came out. I can understand that going up because the original creators did it. I can understand the one shot during No Man's Land being expensive because it was the first time they had used her in the DC universe. I can understand the first issue of her series being expensive.
I
don't get that, like, this tie-in where she'd already been in like 10 episodes.
Right.
And they actually color her mask wrong. But it's one of those things where I have all of those issues, and they're great, great stories. They're great one-off stories. But you're right. If I read it, I'm going to take the trade paperback off.
Yeah.
And you know what? Now we're at an age where Ben is the perfect age for the Batman the Animated Series, where we're not just watching the top 20 episodes anymore.
Yeah.
We're watching anything. Like, I can kind of put on any episode of Batman the Animated Series. He's interested. I can't do that with Superman the Animated Series.
Right.
I tried to show him World's Finest, and he balked at it today.
Oh, really?
I was like, Superman and Batman team up. He's like, but Superman's there.
He does not like Superman.
No, a lot of people don't.
Yeah.
The greatest thing in the world.
This week.
Somewhat topical this week. I reread Justice League International. I know we had Dave Mateus.
Giffen,
Yeah, and it's I'd read him years ago. I think I have some of the issues of that run, and I wanted to read good Justice League stuff because what they're doing now is awful.
I gave up after Jim Lee left, so I haven't read them in years.
It's not good. And I read the first trade, and it's one of those books where it's like it's frustrating because they did a run of hardcovers that are now all sold out. Then they did a run of trades.
I have those, yeah.
Yeah, you've got the, what is it, four volumes?
Yeah, and they didn't finish. They switched to trades. They never finished the whole run. I guess they weren't selling.
And it's so crazy because it's, and that's the problem is I read the first trade. It's, I think, the first six or seven issues that kind of establishes the new direction of the book. And it's lightning in a bottle. It's like the way that book came together, it's like it's never something that's been done before or probably really since on certainly Justice League, maybe on any other team book. And it was just this perfect blend of, you know, high stakes threats and humor and characters bouncing off each other. And it's one of those things where it's like, why isn't DC putting this in an omnibus? It's they don't even have all the trades in print. So you like volume two sold out, but volume one, three, four, five, and six are still available. And it's like, you couldn't even, if you wanted to, you couldn't even read the whole run unless you owned it.
I would say though, going back to our back issue discussion, I found a lot of that run
really
for 50
cheap.
Cents.
Yeah. Half price books.
Well, what I realized what happened as I was collecting them was it was so popular at the time. Like it feels like a cult book. It feels like something
does.
That it feels like a secret that you're sharing.
Right.
But it was so popular. There's a lot of copies of
them. I've read interviews.
Out there.
Mark Waid was talking about it because he had tried to do stuff similar with Justice League. When he was writing the title, and he says, and he would know that book was probably carrying a third of DC's profits because they were doing Justice League Antarctica. They had so many spinoff books. It's like the properties, the money.
There was a quarterly. There was a Europe.
Yeah, it was just generating so much revenue for them. So they're printing tons of them, and it's one of those books where it's, the Justice League has been great since then. Grant Morrison did a great run. It's like there are JLA.
I like Wade's run
great.
A lot.
Wade's run is great. There's a lot of good runs on Justice League, but that's maybe one of the best runs on Justice League they've ever done. And it's, I don't know how long those guys were on those books, but it's
they were on for 5 years. It's like 60 issues.
Yeah.
And they wrote a lot of the spinoffs for a while.
Right.
To get the whole run, you kind of have to get a few. But like I said, I found them all fairly cheap. So they're worth hunting down.
They are. And
I turned Joe Pakovitz onto those. When he and I were like at a convention, I was grabbing them up. But I said, have you ever read this? And he was like, no. The Kevin Maguire art is beautiful.
And it's for a guy that...
Adam Hughes did a few of them when Kevin Maguire left.
And it's one of those books where it's like, Kevin Maguire was nobody. And then he did that book. And it's like...
He was the perfect choice because he could do great facial expressions.
And it's just so, so good. And like I said, it's one of those books where it's Superman's not on the team, Wonder Woman's not on the team, Batman's on it, and that's your A-list guy. It's like Batman, Martian Manhunter, Shazam, Dr. Fate, Guy Gardner. They don't even have like a popular Green Lantern. Yep. It was just Booster Gold and
Booster
Blue Beetle.
Booster Gold and Blue Beetle took over that book.
It was,
and then Fire and Ice later on.
And it's like they're putting guys like the Russian guy in the armor.
Rocket Red,
and it's like
Captain
yeah.
Adams on it for a while.
I'll read a book.
Mr. Miracle and Big Barda.
Yeah.
Oberon is like a bigger character than Mr. Miracle.
It's like Oberon and Maxwell Lord are like major characters. It's any time a writer can write a good run on a team book and make you care about characters that you normally... I would never read, like, a Captain Atom monthly. And he was on the book, and it was phenomenal.
I actually did read the Captain Atom monthly because I was a big Justice League fan. I started reading Blue Beetle, Booster Gold, and Captain Atom, and I didn't like any of their solo titles.
Yeah.
I just went back to Justice League.
To the team book, and it's... I'm more of a team book guy anyway, because I think that comes from being a kid and just wanting to get the most characters for your money. So I always read the team books. And
I also think it comes from being in a big family and getting along with them.
Probably. Yeah.
I went for the solo characters.
Yes. Read into that what you will, viewers.
I really liked Batman and Indiana Jones.
Yep. Just on their own. But like I said, it was just such a great concept, a great idea. The way the characters played off each other was just like, it's just like... It's superhero team books 101. It's so perfect. And it's just a huge shame that it's all not available in print. And it's like, I mean, what else was DC doing in the 80s, you know, that was mainstream, that, you know, was a monthly book that was better than that, you
yeah.
know?
Batman was pretty good. I think after Dark Knight Returns, Batman
yeah, they
has
put
a
their,
serious uptick.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have, at that time, it doesn't really have a long-running creative team.
Yeah.
You have, like, Jim Starlin jumping in and out. Like, he would do 10 Nights of the Beast, and then he was gone. And then he would come in, and he killed Robin, and then he was gone.
Yeah.
It wasn't until, really, like, the 90s? I mean, you had, like, the John Wagner stuff on Detective, and he was creating Ventriloquist and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then you have, people jumping in and out. It's not really till the 90s where you solidify with like Doug Mensch and then and Kelly Jones and Chuck Dixon and Graham Nolan.
Yeah.
When that run is just, I don't know why they're not doing epic collections of the Chuck Dixon, Graham Nolan run.
It's like, that's what I said, there's these huge holes still of stuff that's not in print, but it's one of those like, well, bide your time. And I'm sure DC, you know, they did a George Perez Wonder Woman omnibus.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, so Justice League International at some point I think will get the omnibus treatment. It's just, well, you know, how long do we have to wait for it, I guess?
I think so. And I've heard a lot about politics at DC. I know Mark Waid was, like, really upset when they did Justice League Doom, and he was over at Marvel, and they didn't give him any credit.
Yeah.
And I know Chuck Dixon has said on our podcast that, like he's had a falling out with DiDio and stopped getting work, so they might not be... For a while, they weren't interested in reprinting any of stuff. But recently there's Birds of Prey and Nightwing trades.
Yeah.
So I think they do come around eventually.
Yeah.
But
and hopefully a lot of that is like fan demand. You know, Dixon's run on Nightwing is maybe some of the best stuff they did on Nightwing.
Oh, it's great. I mean, Dixon was untouchable at that point, in my opinion. He was doing Detective, Nightwing, Robin, and Birds of Prey. And he was doing Catwoman for a while. Catwoman bounced back and forth. Doug Mensch would do some stories, then Chuck would do some stories. There was a point where he was doing like 60% of the Batman output in the 90s, and the 90s is when the Tim Burton movies are coming out and the animated series is on.
Yeah.
So like it's a high water mark. Batman in the 90s is kind of untouchable.
Yeah.
And all of it was great.
It was all good stuff.
And he's been on our show 3 times.
3 times.
We
he's
love
great
Chuck
every
Dixon.
Time.
Yeah. God, I don't know what this week at work actually has been so busy that I haven't done much. I've been reading that Kelly Jones book. But I watched an interesting movie on Netflix with Jemaine Clement, and I'm becoming a big Jemaine Clement fan. Between Flight of the Conchords and then What We Do in the Shadows, which I've mentioned several times.
Movie.
There needs to be.
I gotta see that.
Okay, this is not even about the podcast. There needs to be a day where you don't have to leave right after the podcast because I'll put it on.
And I need to watch it.
But you need to watch. You can't watch it in the store.
No, I can't.
And I have the only copy of anyone you know.
That is true.
And you're a bad borrower.
Yeah, I can't borrow it.
You cannot borrow
it. I cannot be trusted.
But there's a movie on Netflix called People, Places, Things, and it's one of the quietest movies I've ever seen, and it's just about Jemaine Clement being a divorced dad, and he's got like 2 girls that he's trying to take care of, and this ties in because he's actually making a graphic novel and teaching at SVA.
That's awesome.
And SVA was a school I wanted to get into when I was at Brooklyn College, But I couldn't get any credits there. I wanted to take Denny O'Neill was teaching a comic writing course when I was at Brooklyn College at SVA, and I really wanted to get in. And I just didn't have the extra money to pay $300 to take a class at a school that I wasn't matriculated in.
Yeah.
Although one of my art directors, who has not been on the show, but she sat in the room and took pictures with us, went to SVA. And he also lives in Astoria, which is my old neighborhood. So it opens with like shots at the park. And Astoria is still my favorite neighborhood to live. And we've talked to a few people that live there. Billy Conahan, I interviewed in Astoria. Ted Alexander is from Astoria. It's a great neighborhood and it's shot all over there. So I was already like, oh, and I was exhausted last night. So I watched it in bed.
Yeah.
So I was susceptible to emotional things. Right? But it is one of the quietest movies that didn't leave me bored. And Renee watched it with me and she's like, you know, I didn't expect Jermaine to do something like this because he's usually so broad. Because you think of Flight of the Conchords and Brett's kind of the quiet one and he's the big one. Like, he's the one doing David Bowie. Men in Black 3.
Yeah.
He's the crazy alien. What We Do in the Shadows, he's like he's a weird vampire. And he plays it really straight and really low. Jessica Williams from The Daily Show is in it.
I love her.
There's a lot of people you'll recognize from, like, you know, little things like Mariner, Comedy Bang Bang, pop up here and there. But it was a nice little film. It's a kind of... It was the kind of thing where I was on Netflix and I was like, I like him. I was like, I'll give this thing 10 minutes. And I watched the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to have to check it out. It sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was good. And mighty, it's even store appropriate.
Yeah.
Maybe some. Maybe, oh, no, there's boobs. Some. There's boobs in it. Yeah. Well, you can follow me and Not On My Book, where there are no boobs. Twitter. You can follow our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/caffeinatedcomics. I think that's how pages go. That's where we post all our news, and you can follow me around. If you see me in Chicago, I work in the city again, so you can see me walking across the bridges.
Right.
Like Mary Tyler Moore, like Bob Newhart. There Mary Tyler Moore did not walk across those bridges. She was in Minneapolis and threw her hat up.
Yeah.
And Steven?
I am at 19 South of Grange Road at Camaras Comics.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that, meatball!